Welcome to this week's Electric Podcast, everyone. I'm Fred Lambert, your host. And as usual, I'm joined by Seth Wintrow. How are you, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
Awesome. I say that every week, but it's, again, a big week for Tesla news. Even news in general, but we're going to focus a lot on Tesla because especially of yesterday's news that quite surprising for most people, I think. I don't know about you, Seth, but...
It's surprising that it continues. Like, it's in hindsight, it seems like every week or so, Tesla totally shakes up its Model 3 pricing.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, this is enough. Like, you need some stability. People are probably freaked out. Don't do that anymore.
And Elon comes again. Elon just tweeted that their pricing is consistent. I mean, it is consistent if... in the sense that it's constantly changing, that's the changes are constant. So that's something.
Right. I guess it's maybe like the Trump chaos model, where you keep everything just in pure chaos, so nobody has a time to like relax and like let things settle in.
Yeah, of course we're talking about the lineup change that Tesla announced in the blog post yesterday. That. The headlines here are Tesla's moving away. I mean, we're going to get into what it entails, moving away from the $35,000 base Model 3, something that has been promised for a long time. There's also the Autopilot, base package of the Autopilot becoming standard on every car, which increases the base price of every car. That's throughout Tesla's entire lineup, Model 3, S, and X. There's the lease for Model 3. Becoming available.
That's a good thing.
That's good for consumer, for sure. But it is kind of weird for Tesla to launch it now with a bunch of other price changes, with the launch in Europe at the same time, launching the cheaper model in Europe. So there's some implication here that we're going to get into about the demand for the Model 3. So if we actually get into it, it's something that... We've been reporting on for a while about I got some heat actually from a few weeks ago when I said that the Model 3 base version at $35,000 still doesn't exist. I was basing that on the fact that a month after Tesla actually launched the vehicle, they didn't deliver it, even though some people had delivery dates that they kept pushing, and on the fact that I couldn't get Tesla to confirm if they ever produced it. The pack, if they very knew that what was the pack and the interior of the vehicle, because of the weight that they were listing for the vehicle, they were listing the same weight as the standard plus battery pack, standard range plus, that vehicle should have more battery, should be heavier, and they were still listing the same weight. At some point, Tesla was telling me, it's a mistake, it shouldn't be the same weight on the listing, and of course, now we know it clearly wasn't a mistake, they just didn't even know the weight of the car, because the car never really existed. Now it's becoming clear, because as Tesla is removing from the online configurator the $35,000 base version, they're still going to deliver at $35,000 the car that were ordered over the last month, but they're going to deliver those cars as standard range plus vehicle with... software limited at 90% of the energy capacity of those cars, and a bunch of other software limited features, which I guess it'd be fair to list them here for you guys. I think it involves like everything that's internet based, basically. I don't have the blog post open just now, but yeah, it's very much a standard range plus vehicle with. And you can still unlock all those software features at any time. We are talking about software limited version of the navigation with live traffic visualization and onboard music streaming service. It won't be available. And even the heated seats won't be available. So they are software limiting heated seats.
That'll be great. Like when it's 0 degrees, you can give Tesla a call and say, "Can I buy those heated seats now?"
And you'll be in great shape. Yeah.
Or maybe you know when Tesla, there's a big storm coming and they enable supercharging. Maybe when it gets like super cold, They'll be like, hey, you can have heated seats for a couple days.
Okay, I know what you mean. Yeah, yeah. When they did that a few times where the recent hurricanes that were hitting the East Coast. Yeah. I mean,
literally, they probably will do something like that. It's not out of the realm of possibility.
It's not, but here's the thing. Sorry about that. I don't think there'd be that many cars are going to be delivered with that range bus, because that's that's the thing we're getting into. So in the article that we wrote last night about it, when we heard the news, we wrote that Tesla is killing the $35,000 Model 3. And we got a lot of pushback, especially from Tesla, about it, and that they say they're not literally killing the car. The car still exists. It can be ordered as a off the menu item. But historically, all off the menu product that Tesla put up for sales, they were virtually all phased out at some point. So of course, Tesla is engaging in a sort of transitional period for the car to be discontinued, basically.
Also, I would note that off the menu items are way more off the menu than they used to be. You used to be able to call Tesla and like speak to a human within like 10 or 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, because they've slashed personnel and closed a lot of stores and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. Now it's now going to take, you know, an hour to get a hold of a human usually. Although the sales line typically is a lot quicker for some reason, but. They're making it even harder than normally off the menu items were before.
Mm-hmm. And of course, they were saying that they move online only. And so the main way is definitely to order a car online. And now the car is not available online. So there's not, it's 2 + 2 = 4. And you can make the math here. And that's how we justify saying that Tesla killed the car. On top of the fact that the car still, they are never going to produce it basically, because the battery pack doesn't exist. They're not going to produce it. It's going to be a standard range plus battery pack. Same thing for the interior. And with Tesla now combining the autopilot feature, that's another thing I want to talk about. It was offered as a $3,000 option, the new base version of autopilot, which basically just includes traffic aware cruise control and the auto steer system. That was a $3,000 package. Now it's becoming standard on all cars, but they are reducing the price to $2,000, I think. So even that, it shows that now the least expensive Model 3 is going to be $39,500. So Model 3 at $35,000 doesn't exist anymore. That's the bottom line here. Why is it a big deal? I want to make it clear, since the beginning, I do think that the standard plus range vehicle was a better value. You had more value for your money. So, and if Tesla's claim is correct about the fact that it was outselling the base version by a factor of 6, I think, if that's true, then it does sort of make sense to discontinue it or whatever they're doing with it. But the $35,000 price point was always a big feature of the Model 3. I mean, it's something that's been talked about for like basically since they launched their Model S, right? They were saying that Model S is going to be $75,000 and the Model 3 is going to be half the price and everything. So that was always the thing, the first mass market vehicle, something that not everyone could afford, of course, but I think the average sale price of a car in the US is what, $33,000, something like that. So a $35,000 car before incentive, that's basically the price. So that was always the big thing. And I know plenty of people that were planning on buying just the $35,000 version with no option whatsoever, including no autopilot and anything. So those people are now left with a tough choice here, unless they already ordered a car, of course. They should still get it, but with the Standard Range Plus Software Limited. So I think it is kind of a big deal that Tesla is moving away from that. And what does it mean? Does it mean they have trouble producing the car at that price point? Does it mean that, is it really because they don't see demand for it? I mean, what's your take on it, Seth?
I don't think they're making money on a $35,000 car. I think they can't. You know, I mean, Elon said, well, we got to get rid of all the stores to make the $35,000 one realistic. And then they didn't get rid of all the stores. So this is, I guess, the the other end of the equation. I don't think it's so. I don't think it ever existed, like you said. I don't think that maybe a year from now, you know, just normal batteries getting cheaper, economies of scale, all that other stuff. I don't think that Tesla will not. You know, I think Tesla can get to 35,000. You know, just on a normal, you know, $1,000 per quarter type of reduction. Mm-hmm. But yeah, maybe they tried to do it too quick. I think whatever
too quick. The car is like a year late at this point.
Yeah, so. I know. But it's just they can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, whatever the equation is, they can't reach it.
Yeah.
So they gotta, you know. I mean, I guess they tried. They offered a $35,000 car. And my understanding is they're honoring that, right? Like the people who ordered a $35,000 car are going to get a car for $35,000, or is they're not getting that car?
Yeah, they are getting that car starting this weekend, but again with the software limited version, so it's not the original car that they ordered. But I mean,
that's actually better.
It is for those people, but again, it clearly if you read between the lines, I mean the language is clear that car is going away. So it's for people that already ordered. That's nice, but. It's not going to be a car from Tesla at this point. They're moving away from that. And what is it reminiscent of, Seth? And I think you're the perfect person to talk about that.
Yes.
The
so,
Model S, when same the Model thing. Tesla promised a $50,000 Model S. They did deliver it, but for how long? For like 2,000 units, and then it was gone. You yeah, bought one of those units, right?
It was never a 40 kilowatt. It was a 60 kilowatt mm-hmm. With a software reduction. But I should also note, and some people probably know this, but getting a higher capacity battery pack has some advantages. Obviously, the car goes a little faster. It's got more power. When you have a Tesla, you don't charge it full every day. You charge it to like, you know, 90%. So that keeps the batteries going longer. Well, if you have a software limited battery, you can charge to 100% every day, which is actually kind of the same as having a standard range pack, except for on long. It's the same as having a higher battery pack, except for like on long range trips. You can't get that extra little bit, which is like, you know, not a big deal. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, for those people who ordered a $35,000 car, they should not be that. I mean, they should be upset about the wait time. But they should not be upset about what they're getting. They're getting a nicer car for the same price, and they're getting a battery pack that's superior. And theoretically, down the road, if you're like, hey, I would like a little bit more range, you know, Tesla will sell you that, you know, extra part of your battery that you're driving around with you.
Same thing for the interior options. Those are also going to be available.
Yes, the heated seats, you know, that the cold day, give Tesla a call and mm-hmm. your seats will be heated.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. They are getting a better car than they ordered. So the reason why we are upset about this, or upset, I mean, we're trying to understand the move here, is really on the long term, the availability of that car in the long term, because now, what, 6 years later, and that $50,000 Model S that doesn't exist anymore. So if we base ourselves on historical data here, that base Model 3 will never exist. Now, that doesn't mean that that's based on their sort of like that data. So, of course, Tesla could change their approach here, which I hope they do, because I think in the long term, a $35,000 Model 3 would make sense, especially if they clean up their... And now I know I'm calling for even more changes to the lineup now, but I think Tesla is in a big transitional period right now in terms of their vehicle lineup. We can get into that a little bit too with Model S and X, like we did last week about the upgrades coming up, and we did learn a little bit more about that. We're going to have an article about it soon as I can get all my sources together, but there's going to be a big Model S and X upgrade coming. You could even call it a refresh if you're not Elon Musk.
And it's a refresh.
It is definitely a refresh.
It's a big one, inside and out.
Yeah. And so when that comes, I think Tesla can put back the Model S and X as flagship vehicles, and those cars are going to become much more competitive in their own segment, which should strengthen Tesla's position on the market. And then the Model 3 is already like, well, just killing the competition in its segment. But I think a more clear lineup where Tesla is maybe a little bit happier with the canonization of the Model S with the Model 3, that would be a big deal. And at that point, I think we're going to see a more, even though Elon claims that Tesla is already consistent with their price changes and the lineup changes, I think that would become the truth at some point soon.
I like the price changes that are one thing, just a slight bit, you know, once a week. Like, if they could just limit themselves to one price change a week, like, very small, like, in one direction or the other, I think that's reasonable. Like, I don't think that, you know, anything that's, like, almost not worth posting about. Like, not a significant amount and just once a week. And I think everybody would be cool with that.
Yeah, Jamie had a good point earlier in the electric newsroom. It was like, I had a friend that just bought a car, a Model 3, last week, and this week it's $1,500 cheaper. So he goes back to Tesla and then has to, I haven't got delivery yet, get the $1,500 back. And then based on what Elon Musk just said, that Tesla is not cutting checks for price changes anymore, that they won't get the money back. But then he also introduced the 7 days return, no question asked at any time with full refund. So he could just return the car and buy a new one, which would be a lot more complicated than just reducing that price by $1,500. So it does create those weird situation, really. And of course, if you look at the other side of the table and you look at the short point of view, it reads
demand.
The end. Like, Tesla's going bankrupt, and that's Tesla taking its last breath and everything, which I don't agree on, of course. But I definitely understand where they're coming from, because their moves are being increasingly weird and worrying. But all right, let's move on a little bit from the price changes to something a little bit better, which is the the fact that with those changes, now the European markets and in China too, they can order a cheaper version of the Model 3, so they won't get access to I probably do have the menu again, so they do get access now to the standard range plus the orders open for those. So that can be ordered in all of Tesla's European markets and in China. And it does reduce in a significantly cheaper Model 3 available in those markets for the first time, and the cheapest Tesla vehicle available in those markets for the first time. So that's great. If you look at Norway, and Tesla's been killing it in Norway this quarter with the first delivery of the Model 3 and just the higher-end version. And now they have access to a version at 177,000 Kroner version, which is about 44,000 US, which is very cheap for a vehicle in Norway. As you know, Norway, the way it works, they don't really have those incentives for electric vehicles themselves, but they do have high taxes on polluting vehicles, on gas-powered diesel vehicles. And so those cars, even though they are not necessarily like big gas-guzzling cars, like even like a diesel VW Golf, for example, is going to be quite expensive. Don't quote me on this, I'm not exactly sure, but I think it might be even more expensive than that $44,000 equivalent in kroners. So that means that a Model 3, which is not a Golf, it's a little bigger vehicle, and it's a premium vehicle, technically, especially if you get that partial premium interior. Now, that's basically the standard version. It is a pretty good deal, and I think it's going to blow up EV sales again in Norway. I feel probably past like 70% this quarter. Whenever they start the deliveries, actually, because of course they open order now, but cars going from California to Norway takes a few weeks. Also, the leases, that's also a big demand driver from Tesla. So they did launch the leases, the lease program for the Model 3, and you can now get a Model 3 for, is it $25,000 down and $2,500?
$2,500,
yeah. And $570, I think, is the cheapest lease right now. $570 a month. So it's not cheap. It's still a pretty expensive lease, but it is the cheapest way to get a Model 3 right now, for sure. To get a Tesla vehicle, period.
Yeah, and that's a 3-year lease. So, yeah. You know, if Tesla had made like a 5-year lease, it would have been way a little bit cheaper. But anyway, yeah.
But then they won those car back within 3 years as a thing.
That was interesting. I mean, basically, they said, look, we're going to have the Tesla network going in 3 years, within 3 years, mm-hmm. and we're going to need all those cars back for our crazy network, mm-hmm. which I...
It makes a lot of sense when you think about it.
No. If they can pull it, sure.
If this the network is actually a thing, it makes a lot of sense. Right. If self-driving doesn't work, then it doesn't mean anything for sure.
Well, then in addition to the self-driving not working... and the Tesla network not happening, that then they also have a lot of cars on their hands. And, you know, they could switch.
But say, since those cars were released and they already got a lot of revenue from them, it makes a lot more sense to them to keep the cars and putting them on the network than build a new car to put it on the network. So if we go back a little bit here, the Tesla network, the plan for it originally when it was presented to us was that Tesla would release through an app, maybe even the existing app that they already have, a feature, a Uber-like feature that is ride-hailing, but only with autonomous vehicle instead of drivers. And the concept is that current Tesla owners could put their own car in that network. So you go to work, instead of leaving the car parked in the parking lot for however long you're working, 8 hours or something. Sorry, the car could go out and... generate revenue for you by giving people autonomously giving people rides, which sounds very futuristic. But we're not. If self-driving exists, then it's of course that makes sense. So in a self-driving future, it would make sense. Now they said that owners could do that, and they could also like limit the kind of things that your car could do. So you could do like anything. Like anyone could call your car and get it. Or it could be just your circle of friends, just your family, or just like a few people that you select specifically. So you could have like one Tesla for a whole family of people that use it through that service, basically. You could do that. So those people wouldn't be charged or would like just charge a very small amount for Tesla service or something. Or you can send it to a stranger and a stranger would be paid. But to compensate, Tesla would want to have its own cars on the fleet too. So to especially in markets where there's not enough owners putting their cars in that shared fleet. And of course, building a car specifically for that, it's a big expenditure, a capital expenditure at the beginning for long-term revenue. So it would make sense to instead take a car that's already paid for through the lease, and then you give it this sort of end-of-life task for the car.
Yeah, and you know who wouldn't want to ride in a Tesla versus some random Uber or Lyft, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I thought this was also interesting in the context of the video we posted today, where Elon said that if you buy a Tesla today, it's an appreciating asset instead of a depreciating asset. I don't know if that's the case, at least this year or next year, but I guess the theory is in 3 years, that car, because it will drive itself, can bring in an income. And in addition to that, people will want them for that reason. So that a $50,000 Tesla that you purchase right now will be worth, you know, 50 something more than, you know, whatever in 3 years. I don't necessarily believe that. I don't think I would bet the farm on that prediction, but it is interesting that he is thinking that way.
Tesla would have to increase the price for that to happen, right? Because then if you can buy a new car,
oh yeah, you just buy
for cheaper, then why would your own car that's used appreciate in value? So I think he really meant it's going to be a revenue generating asset more than an appreciating asset, right? It's still going to depreciate in price, unless Tesla decide to increase the price.
Well, I mean, if the car is making all this money, why wouldn't Tesla increase the price? Because people would get them, you know, they would just buy a million of them and have them just drive around all the time.
Yeah.
So theoretically, Tesla's going to have the ability, like, so this is Elon's thought process. Mm. You know, people are going to have these cars, they're going to be able to earn all this money out on their own, so... Why should I sell it for $35,000 when, you know, that they pay back 35,000. So, you know, let's sell it for 50,000. Mm-hmm. And you know, maybe that's the case. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So based on that, if that's really the thinking here, it would make sense for someone right now that does believe in that future, that does trust that Elon is correct about the progress of these full self-driving system. It would make sense to buy like a bunch of cars now and have for cheaper and have your own fleet of vehicles for the Tesla network when it does come online, or then just sell back those vehicles, which gonna technically appreciate in value, like Elon claimed. I wouldn't recommend it. I think it's a big risk investment, but it does make a lot of sense for those who already operate taxi fleets. So we've seen people building fleets of Tesla vehicles for taxis with a taxi driver in it. We can talk about the Amsterdam fleet from the Amsterdam airport in Schiphol. That I think it's a 100+ car fleet, and they just updated it to Model X with the latest autopilot system, which should be able to be upgraded to full self-driving. So that fleet of cars could be worth a lot more as soon as Tesla just flipped the switch on the Tesla network, and then they put all those cars in the Tesla network, and they fire, that's sad for them, but they fire all the drivers, and then they have a very variable fleet of vehicles. We're talking about like a perfect future, really, but it is exciting to think about if it does work.
And how do you feel about people riding in your car? Like,
I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty like I let a lot of people not only ride in my car but drive my car, because like I'm very much an evangelist when it comes to electric vehicles. I just want everyone to try them and everything. So you would think that I'd be more than willing to put my car on the Tesla network, but I feel it's like it's a completely different level if you're not there, if you're not involved. I went to California for 3 months, and I just lent in the car to my friend for free. So it would make sense for me to just do the same thing instead, but put it on the Tesla network. But yeah, I know where you're coming from. I mean, your fart thing, like
right. I don't want people farting in my car. That's just kind of grosses me out to think that that's happening to my seats. How would you prevent like people, undesirables, I want to say, like people who would vandalize or, you know, they have
the cabin facing camera.
But I mean, even that, like, you know, you could see people, but somebody could take some keys or a knife and cut a hole in your seat if they, you know, behind the. Yeah.
Well, like, there's it doesn't catch everything. Instead of using a similar system as Uber, where not only the car is being rated, well, normally it's the driver that's being rated, but in this case, it would very much be the car that'd be rated, and the rider would be rated too. And he said something like you could put your car to only work with 5-star riders, I should say, or whatever kind of rating system they have, so that if someone is ever caught doing that, then the rating would drop or they would be suspended for the system entirely, so they would be disincentivized from doing anything to the car. So there's definitely things that can be done. But yeah, if it does happen, there's nothing to stop it, for sure.
Yeah. I don't know if I would do it. Like, I would maybe try it, see how it went, but it just seems like, I mean, so here's an example. We got a condo in Vermont for skiing, and part of our equation of like, can we make this work financially is like, well, we'll rent it out for a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, the weekends we don't go up, but it turns out you got to move all your stuff out. So you got to like clear out your whole refrigerator and anything valuable. You got to move out or move into a storage area. And you got to change the bed sheets and do all this other stuff. And we were like, that's a lot of work just for like one weekend of, you know, somebody else buying it. So we talked it over and we just decided that we were going to have the people who came to visit us buy us food. And that's how we were going to make the ends meet on the ski condo. And it didn't, obviously, but it just like getting something ready to rent is kind of a hassle. And
but I'm not sure it's a fair comparison between a home and a car.
Well, you got stuff in your car. You know, you got to clean it out. You probably have to vacuum it before you send it out on Uber rides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair point.
You know, I don't know. It just, you know, and then when it comes back, like, you know, maybe somebody left their wallet or phone and then you got to deal with that. It just seems like a lot of extra stuff that busy people aren't going to really want to have to deal with.
So then the logic from there, for those people like you, visibly,
mm-hmm.
that wouldn't want to rent their car on the system, then the price of owning that car privately without putting it in the system would go way up, right?
Theoretically, that's right.
Yeah, that's interesting. Interesting.
So maybe it's good that I bought now and I'll just keep the one I have.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to upgrade it to a all-wheel drive? Are you tempted yet?
Oh, I'm waiting for the Model Y for that.
Yeah, you're going to exchange it for the Model Y. I've been thinking about that too a little bit, like maybe exchanging my Model 3 performance or Model Y performance. I think I only do it if there's like a big upgrade to that comes within that time to the performance versions, which is not impossible.
I mean, if I was going to get one car, it would just be the Model Y because, you know, we go on trips and whatever. I like having a sedan, like just for around town. I like having a Chevy Bolt for like trips to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. Pretty easy to get around and park and all that stuff. So, you know, maybe at the end of the situation, we'll end up with two Model Ys. No idea. Or maybe we'll get a pickup, or maybe we'll get a Roadster.
When is your Model X lease is due?
Next year, next May. So it's not gonna last over, but if the Model Y comes in the winter, we could probably go a couple of months without a SUV like vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I still have the Rivian in my that is still on my roadmap. Really, I haven't committed exactly to buying it, but I did put a reservation down to be among the first to have the opportunity to do so. And right. I feel like a pickup truck would be interesting, especially since I'm getting into the all e-bike world and I have my Surround and I could move around with it and everything. So that could be interesting.
Yeah, I think Rivian got a lot more real when the Amazon investment came.
Oh, yeah.
I think that went from like very optimistic to kind of a sure thing.
Yeah, $700 million in your pockets will do that for you. Yep. All right. Speaking of autopilot and chances of it becoming full self-driving within the year, which is, again, what Elon keeps stating, with the new full self-driving computer now being in the cars, or at least we're trying to get a confirmation on that, on if it's all new production cars that get it. Because on the website right now, if you order a Model 3, for example, it says that it includes the full self-driving if you buy the full self-driving option, which would make sense, of course. But our understanding is that Tesla wants to limit the number of retrofits that it's going to have to do in the future. So it would make sense to be in all new cars right now. And then people can just buy the full self-driving package as a software upgrade. We're going to try to get information for you on that as soon as possible. But for the cars that do get the new computers, with the current version of the software, Elon says that it's only using about 5% of the computer load. Or 10% if you take into account the redundancy, which I think you should, compared to if you have a 2.5 autopilot computer, which is August 2017, I think that's been introduced, and you're at 80% right now of the compute load on your computer, which means that the closer you get to 100%, that means you're going to be feature locked at one point. You can still get some optimization of the software through the neural net system, but you shouldn't be able to get many more features than that, which is interesting considering Tesla still hasn't delivered all the promised features that come with the original launch of that Autopilot 2.0 system back in October 2016. So yeah, that's something to keep an eye on because I remember when they did launch that, I asked the same thing to Elon. I asked him where they had in terms of the compute load for the Autopilot 1.0 computer, and at that point he said it's full of that in terms of features. They do not have enough space to introduce any new features, so there's still going to be some improvement, but no new feature at that point. So we're getting close to that for Autopilot 2.0 or 2.5, whatever. Moving on, the safety report for Autopilot has been released this week. So if you guys have been following that over the last few quarters, Tesla has been voluntarily releasing some data about the number of accidents per mile that they're reaching and comparing the ones with Autopilot activated or Autopilot not activated. And over the last quarter, they registered one accident per 2.87 million miles driven on Autopilot and one accident per 1.76 million miles without Autopilot. They claim that it compared to NHTSA's overall data in the U.S. of one crash per 436,000 miles. So both versions would be higher than the average. Of course, that's the data is being criticized a lot, and I think to a degree the criticism is fair. Because, well, first of all, if you compare them to the NHTSA data, NHTSA, it's all cars available in the market, which, of course, the average age of a car is a lot older than Tesla's average age of car, and car becomes safer as they are more recent. Also, Tesla's cars are all premium vehicles, which should be also safer than less expensive vehicles. So it's hard to compare that data. And then if you want to compare the data with Autopilot engaged and not engaged, technically, where you can engage with the pilot is generally a safer driving environment than where you not engage it. We're mainly talking about highway driving, which is where you're going to mainly use the pilot versus city driving, where you have a higher chance of getting into an accident and where you won't engage with the pilot. So take the data for what it is, which is not much really, but to be fair to Tesla, it's a lot more than any other automaker is doing right now. There's no other automaker releasing the data on a quarterly basis like Tesla does. So you have to give them points for that. I wish every automaker would do it. So now we would have a better comparison point, because instead of comparing Tesla's Autopilot engaged versus non-engaged versus NHTSA's number, you could compare GM Super Cruise against Tesla's Autopilot when they're on and things like that. So I think that would be more interesting. But so far, we can't do that because no other automaker has taken Tesla up on their challenge here. Oh yeah, let's get a bit into that thing that came out yesterday about Tesla and Panasonic suspending investment at Gigafactory 1 here in Nevada. That was an interesting report here that came out of Nike. It's Asian, or I think it's even especially a Japanese business publication. And yeah, they came out with a strange report saying that Tesla and Panasonic are both freezing any investment into increasing the capacity at Gigafactory 1. And the whole report didn't cite any sources. It was all like matter of fact. It just, that happened. So here it is, which is not normally how you're going to report on those things. Normally, it's just going to be more about like inside sources or saying this or that or whatever. But Tesla did come in on the report saying that they will continue to make investment in Gigafactory 1, but they're going to focus more right now on increasing the output based on existing capital investment in the production equipment. So they think they can get more out of the current investment than so they don't want to right away make new investment to increase the production capacity. That said, after commenting that, and there was some misreporting about it, saying that, oh, Tesla just confirmed Nike's report, basically. They did came out with a second comment saying that no, it wasn't confirmation. They do still plan to make other investments, so there's no freeze on investment. It's just that they do indeed plan to focus more on their current production equipment in terms of increasing production capacity instead of new investment. So,
yeah, so I think Nikkei was getting the Panasonic side of the story. Exactly. I hope that's not nationalist or anything, but you know, obviously Panasonic's based in Japan. Nikkei's based in Japan. Their information probably comes from Panasonic, who sound like they're freezing investments in Gigafactory 1 and Gigafactory 3. That may be because of a demand slowdown, which doesn't sound like it's too far off at this point. I think it's a temporary
Tesla did deny that, though. They did say that no matter their current demand, they're still battery cell starved.
Yes, and you can tell that's the case if you've ever tried to buy any Tesla stored energy storage equipment.
Yeah, exactly. People need to make the distinction between the demand for vehicles and for energy product. That's right.
Right. So I think maybe this is more kind of dialing back rather than cutting off.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like it's more on Panasonic's side than Tesla's side. So that's pretty much my takeaway.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I think that's very much accurate. I think they caught the Panasonic side of thing and they just put Tesla together with them. But it is kind of worrying too if that's all Panasonic is seeing it. So we'll keep an eye out on that. Moving on to here. Oh yeah, potentially good news on the federal government side, which is not something we hear a lot these days.
And I'm not optimistic about this one.
No, you're not? All right, yeah. So what we're talking about here is that there was a new bipartisan bill that was introduced in the Congress this week about sort of reforming the federal tax credit for electric vehicle, which is something that we've been talking a lot about lately. On both sides of the aisle, people have been introducing bills legislators have been introducing bills to change the program. On the Republican side, it's been mostly about killing it altogether. On the Democratic side, it's been about expanding it. Now they do seem, now it's a bipartisan bill, so they do seem to have reached some kind of compromise here where they would still keep that limit of a number of units, electric vehicle units per manufacturer, but when it's reached that, right now it's 200,000 units, they would get an extra 400,000 units that they could deliver over a period of a year. So basically, it would be a much bigger fair side period. And for the companies that already hit that threshold, namely Tesla and GM, they would get those 400,000 or more, 400,000 more cars. So it would be a big deal for Tesla, would be a big deal for GM. I mean, if that thing would have passed, probably GM wouldn't have killed the Volt, I think.
I agree.
And probably they would increase production on that Volt, which was supposed to happen a while back. Seth is not really optimistic. It is a bipartisan bill. It was introduced by, we're going to give credit where credit is due right now, Democratic Senators D.B. Stabenow? Sorry if I messed up your name, D.B., Gary Peters, and Republican Senators Lamar Alexander and Susan Collins, as well as Democratic Representative Dan Kildee.
Susan Collins is from Maine, just the Republicans. Lamar Alexander is from Texas. Susan Collins is, generally speaking, a very moderate Republican. Abortion and all the other things she's very moderate on. Lamar Alexander is kind of a nut job, even as Republicans go. I don't know this is all about. Maybe it's related to wind or something.
It is related to, I think, American jobs. That's where we can win the Republicans on this.
Theoretically,
the most affected.
You've
by
got
the
oil and fossil fuel money on this side. So I'm not optimistic, particularly with Trump, who like.
Yeah, at the end of the day, Trump needs to sign off on it. So that's right. A big deal. But I do think, even though I agree that the chances are slim, I do think Republicans, I do think Trump specifically, could be convinced if you tell them that right now, the way it is set up, it is advantaging foreign automakers. It's as simple as that. Because
right.
Audi is loving it right now. Audi is like, if that goes true, we have a chance against Tesla because... Or Audi e-tron is going to get the full tax credit while Tesla gets basically no tax credit as soon as the end of the year. So it's a big deal for them.
And the Koreans as well, Kia and Hyundai.
Yeah, they also get a chance to compete more aggressively with the full tax credit. And the two companies most affected is Tesla, which a lot of people forget is an American automaker, and GM, which is, of course, a huge American automaker. So, right. Of course... GM and Trump might not be the most on the most good terms right now, on the best of terms. But, yeah, I mean, if he can get over it, over the fact that he would be clearly helping GM, and that's not something that he wants to do based on his most recent comment about the company. And has he ever said anything bad about Tesla? I don't think he has, right?
I mean, he said things about electric cars, for sure.
Yeah, he did. And he did add a fallout with Elon specifically, too, because Elon was on his console, and then he bailed out as soon as Paris, as soon as Trump pulled out the Paris Agreement.
Right.
All right, so, yeah, I tend to agree with you that the chances are not very high for this passing, but I kind of want to hold on to some good glimmer of hope here that since this thing is somewhat bipartisan, and it could get some traction at least.
I mean, it could pass the Senate, and if it passes the Senate, it'll pass the Congress, House for sure.
Yeah. So
it'll get to Trump's desk, and he'll have to publicly veto it. Which if the GM auto workers are for it, maybe it helps. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he'll say, hey, you got to open those plants you shut down.
Oh, you mean he could? Oh, yeah, he could leverage it for something else. Oh, yeah, I like where you're going with this. Yeah, that could be interesting.
That could be interesting. I don't know. I mean, I hate to say it, but that might actually be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's out there. We've seen a lot of these coming and going, and actually from both sides. The guy from Nevada, obviously with the Gigafactory and his constituency, Republican, floated a continuing the tax break, but then he got voted out of office pretty swiftly, so that didn't work out for him too well.
I mean, there's been a bunch of bills about the EV tax credit that's been introduced over the last year. I mean, some to kill it, some to expand it, but this one's my favorite so far.
Right, and it's because it's bipartisan, it's big, it's not just like 1,000 or 2,000. I think Georgia just introduced $2,000. They used to be huge. They used to give $5,000 for EVs. So 2,500, and then they totally dropped off the face of the earth in terms of EVs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they want to get some of that back.
So. Yeah, Atlanta at some point, there was just leaves left and right.
Right.
It was a huge market for Nissan, for Nissan's electric cars. All right, speaking of Nissan, let's move on from Tesla a little bit go into a few non-Tesla EV news this week, starting with SF Motors. I don't know if you guys remember SF Motors, but it's one of the Chinese EV startup that we've been most excited about, because unlike some other startup in the EV space, they weren't big on marketing at first, and instead they focused on, we're going to deliver a production product. And they bought the... Not the Mitsubishi plan, AM General, the plant that was doing the original commercial version of the Hummer. They bought that plant, and they built a factory in China, and they said, we have production capacity to produce electric vehicles. And now they are already unveiling that production vehicle, and it's at the same time they're announcing the new brand, because SF Motors it's not a great name. They launched a new consumer. I think they're still called SF Motors, but now they're selling their car on SF Motors is selling their car under a new brand called Cirrus. Is that how you pronounce that? Cirrus?
I was thinking Series, but
Series.
I don't know.
Oh yeah, Series. Yeah. That's a Greek.
Yeah, but it's spelled differently. It's like at the C. Yeah. I don't know.
Hmm. Either way. The car is called the SF5, so we're just going to call it that. It's sort of a crossover vehicle, a small, compact SUV, if you will. It looks sleek.
Yeah, and those are quite popular.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the segment is huge. Yeah, the segment is huge, but the car itself, I mean, the SF5, it looks very good. They announced some specs, so... The car, the technology is based on another thing that's interesting about SF Motor is that they bought out Martin Eberhard, this new startup. Martin Eberhard is, of course, the original founder of Tesla and the first CEO of the company. He was pushed out by Elon Musk and the board back in 2009. He ended up doing a bunch of other things over the last 10 years with other companies, namely Volkswagen for a while. But in the last few years, he started his own powertrain, electric vehicle powertrain startup, And last year or a year and a half ago or something, he got bought out by SF Motors. The integrated is powertrain technology into the SF5 and other vehicles in the lineup. They have the SF7 that it's coming to. We haven't seen the production version of it yet, but it looks very cool in the production and the prototype version. Anyway, back to the SF5. The all-electric version that they release is based on a 90 kilowatt hour battery pack, for good for 300 miles of range. They didn't disclose on what type of rating that it's based on, and I'd be curious to know, because the Chinese have been often for the global press, they've been doing like this NEDC thing, which I thought everyone has dropped at this point. Of course, and it's not accurate. But a 90 kilowatt hour battery pack on that kind of vehicle, I'm thinking that 300 miles of range makes sense, right?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, right. Maximum power output of 510 kilowatts, 1,040 newton meter of torque, 0 to 60 in 3.5, top speed of 250 kilometers an hour. Yeah, that's some pretty good specs. There's no price yet, so of course all those specs need to come at the price. I'm feeling like they're gonna release the price, by the way, as soon as next week, I think, because that thing is gonna be a fully on. They just released a bunch of pictures so far, and they started production at the Chinese factory. But the pricing and availability information are coming next week at the Shanghai Motor Show. I'm thinking like 50, the equivalent of 50,000. Would that be fair?
That sounds about right.
Because that's like the Model Y competitor, basically. But a 90 kilowatt battery pack, 300 miles of range. 300 miles of range, there's a Model Y version with 300 miles of range, I think. But it doesn't have a 90 kilowatt battery pack.
No, so. It's 75. Or theoretically, it's the same as the...
Yeah. Now, very excited about that stuff, because, again, I do like... how SF Motors is doing thing right now. But then they came out with this thing that I'm not completely on board with, which is a range extender version with a much smaller 33 kilowatt battery pack. Don't know why they're doing that, because if they do the all electric version right, then there's no reason to buy the range extender version, much like the BMW thing. But online, the all electric version was a 33 kilowatt pack for the BMW. So if there was a 90 kilowatt battery pack rightly priced for the BMW i3, no one would have bought the range extender version of the 32 kilowatt battery pack. So if I put myself in the same situation here for the SF5, makes no sense to me, unless they do something weird with the pricing, which is not possible, since that's a third of the range capacity of the pack. So maybe it's going to be much cheaper, which would be disappointing, because I'm really looking forward to seeing this the mix, the split of cells between those two versions. I think that would be very interesting.
I mean, we just need to see more of these kind of vehicles. Like, this is clearly the most popular, like a small SUV is like what everybody wants.
Versatile.
Yeah, so... And there really isn't, I mean, the Niro and the Kona are kind of the low end of that. You might as well throw the Chevy Bolt in there. But really, I think people want something that's a little bit bigger, maybe even a third row. And that's, like, when I look out on the road right now, that's like 80% of what I see. So I don't know why it's taking everybody, you know, all the electric vehicle manufacturers so long to get there. Tesla's Model Y is a year and a half away. The Jaguar I-Pace is there, I guess, in that segment. Audi e-tron's there now. But, you know, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of options out there for people who want to jump in, you know, want an EV but still want that form factor.
All right. That's fair. We're going to get into the last story of the day, but there's like 200 people in the room right now. If you guys want to ask us a few questions, it'll be the time to put them in the chat, and we're going to go through them after the next story, so you have a few minutes to get your question. I see we already have one here by Daniel Hermes, who wants me to justify why we wrote kill the $35,000 Model 3. We already did that at the beginning of the show. So
well, you can't really kill what never existed.
Sorry, you lagged there, said I missed that.
No, sorry. You can't kill what never existed. Maybe that's his problem.
good point. But no, seriously, Daniel, I'm pretty sure that's not what you meant, but we did justify why we wrote that at the...
You can just scroll back.
Yeah, if you scroll back at the beginning of the show, you're gonna get our justification for it here. And no, we didn't correct it on Facebook when we said Moves Away. Moves Away was the original headline we did in, but then we discussed it in the Electric Newsroom. And we were like, yeah, if we read between the line here, it's clear that they are killing the version. So we thought it'd be more realistic for us to say we killed it. But we go into more detail at the beginning of the show, so I'm not going to go through it again. Again, put your question down in the room right now. We're going to go through them right after this. But Geely just launched also their own global brand for electric vehicle called Geometry.
That looks like a nice car.
If you've been following Geely for a while now, it's not surprising that they're launching a global EV brand. They've been doing some very big move in the space. They bought Volvo, and they said push Volvo to electrify their lineup, launching their first electric car soon through Polestar, but also Volvo's going to have their own too under their own brand. They bought a 10% into Daimler. They've been pushing electrification there too. They have, of course, their own brand in China, Geely Auto, and LinkedIn Co., which is their premium global brand, but they're doing just hybrids, I think, right now. They don't have an electric version. Now they are launching Geometry as an all-electric global high-end brand. But let's put some hair quotes on high-end here. Because the first car that they launched with that new brand, and they're going to launch 9 more by 2025. The first car is called the Geometry A, and it's an all-electric high-end sedan. But let me read you some specs here for you to understand why I'm being a little bit... throwing some shade at them. It's 51.9 kilowatt hour battery pack or 61.9 kilowatt hour battery pack with the KTL stationary lithium batteries. So KTL is the huge battery manufacturer in China. So that 51 and 61 battery is good for 410, which is kilometers, so 255 miles of range, and 500 kilometers or 311 miles of range. But, like we were just talking about SF, they are basing things on the NEDC standard, which is, of course, not realistic. So we do anticipate range much closer to 200 and to 250 miles of range, depending on the two versions of the cars, which would make a lot of sense based on the 50 to 60 kilowatt battery pack. And doesn't look like a very aerodynamic vehicle, right?
No,
just to the high, it doesn't look that aerodynamic.
So highway will be down.
Probably. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, and it looks like it is a premium sedan, but
more importantly, I think, and you brought this up, the maximum power of 120 kilowatts.
Yeah.
And that's not a lot. 250 newton meters of torque. To put that into perspective, if you lost one of your motors, Fred, I think you would have more than 120 kilowatts.
Yeah, or the Leaf. You can. It's the new Leaf that has that kind of power. So, and the Leaf is certainly not a premium sedan, and it does much faster than 0 to 100 kilometers an hour in 8.8 seconds. So
yeah, the new Leaf is like a close to 200 horsepower, over 200 horsepower.
Yeah.
So this is like not even Leaf territory.
Yeah. I think when they said premium sedan, they mean more about the fact that the interior is more premium. It's the specs are not. The specs are really not there. Really
yeah, it not. Does look interesting inside. You got a nice big display.
Yeah, the interior does look nice. They have a heads-up display too, if you're into that stuff. But then where it gets interesting is that it doesn't come with premium prices, though. Not if you ask me. The car starts at 200,000 RMB, was like the Chinese yen, and goes up to 250,000. So that's converted to USD. It's $31,000 to $37,000 US. That's good. And that's before subsidies in China. So after subsidies, you can buy that car for 22,000 in China, which is pretty good. And of course, they have ambitions to bring that model globally. So that's why we're using the USD equivalent here. They say that they already have 27,000 orders, and more than half of them are overseas. They do mention countries like Singapore, Norway, and France. Nothing about the U.S. yet, but they do plan to expand. That car is also going to be unveiled at the... you can go on the electric right now. You have a bunch of pictures and everything, so they did unveil already a bunch of stuff. But it's going to be officially launched at the Shanghai Motor Show next week. More detail about the availability of the vehicle then. Hopefully about the global availability would be nice too. So that's it for us for in terms of the news this week. Did you were you watching for a question? Can we go into a question?
Looking now. Okay. Mostly, does anyone have a feel of the break-even point for Tesla deliveries? So we can really understand how serious missed targets are. That's from David Adams.
I'm not sure I get the question. The break-even point?
Yeah, so when Tesla can break even. I think they are breaking even. The problem is with this $35,000 Model 3, they went back under. That's gone now, or theoretically gone. So they should be about even, I think, this quarter.
Yeah, I think they already said that they're going to be down this quarter. You mean this quarter, Q2?
Upcoming quarter.
Yeah, in Q2, I could see that breaking even, yeah, for sure. Do you think Tesla would do an S and X refresh in 2019? That's for sure. We already announced last year with our exclusive report that the interior refresh is coming. And last week we reported that new motors are coming to the Model S and X. And in a few days, we're going to have a better report on the extent of that refresh in terms of hardware upgrade. But the entire refresh, the timing of it should be pretty close too. So they might time it all together. But if they do that, then they do an actual full refresh of the car. And then you might even lie about Tesla doing refresh. So I don't know. But we're going to have more on that soon.
And that's pretty much it. I think we answered everything.
Yeah, well, we didn't go back a lot in the comments. There's a bunch of other comments, but for now, I think it's fine. And all right, so that's it. Thanks a lot for watching, everyone. Thanks a lot for listening. If you're listening on your podcast audio only, you can hit the subscribe button for our next videos. Micah is working on a bunch of e-bikes video right now. They're always entertaining. If you guys want to watch that, it's on the next track. We're gonna have more about cars too next week. Seth is doing the family trip in the Niro, right?
Yes, Kia Niro, all around San Francisco, maybe road trip to LA, if the i5 chargers.
Good luck with that. we have more coming soon too. Thanks a lot. We're going to see you same place, same time next week. Bye-bye.